Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Gigabit Nation Broadband Talk Radio. I'm your host, Craig Settles, and I want to welcome everyone in the audience today and thank you for taking time to be with us. Today's program is sponsored by Hiawatha Broadband Communications, an FTTP provider that's committed to connecting rural communities and economies to the world. You can check out Hiawatha Broadband at www.hbci.com. We're here today, and as every day, to provide useful information and insights to help communities, companies, and nonprofit organizations get more, better broadband to everywhere it needs to be in America. So, simple little thing. Now, minor housekeeping item, we are not taking call-ins today. You can join us online for chat, and if you have some questions for our guests, please be feel free in putting those out there. Today, our guest is Zane Logan, who's the city administrator for Powell, Wyoming. And Powell came to my attention a few months ago, in large part due to its history and how it overcame this this challenge of bringing big-time broadband to what is a small town in a sparsely populated county. And today, they've got this fiber network, and they've got two service providers, and they're really doing it up big time there. And so we're going to find out the ins and outs and some of the behind-the-scenes story. So, Zane, good morning, and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
Well, it depends on where you are, I guess. On the eastern side, it's actually afternoon. But for us folks here in California, we're just still a little bit behind. But we will indeed catch up.
Yeah, well, it's noon here, so in mountain time. So
There we go. So let's jump in. Let's talk about the evolution of this from the original idea up to the time that you guys decided to pull the trigger and move the network project forward. I mean, from your perspective, what was the failure in the market that led Powell to start considering going it alone on this broadband adventure?
Well, basically, where this started with me in the city was probably late 05. Looking at city, of course, one of my philosophies as a city administrator is I feel like the purpose and the major function for cities is infrastructure. And, of course, in the past, infrastructure, you know, for cities involved streets and parks and police and engineering, airports, depending, you know, or even fire departments, depending on which part of the country you're in. And those are the obvious things that people think of in terms of infrastructure. But I guess coming from an electrical engineering background and having an interest, as a lot of people do, in technology, I could also see the need for communications. And I will say that the city did have, at that time, had several, or at least two, if not three, depending on the services, different incumbent providers. But when we discussed stuff with them, they didn't. Their attitude is about the fiber is that they would only do it if there was a customer that needed that. Their argument was we didn't really need it. And basically it was if we decide you need it, we'll build it. Otherwise, you don't need it. And so that's what kind of started it, actually. Mm-hmm. So
now you had a fiber network ring built in 2000. And I think it was like about 5 years before you decided to move into expanding that that particular piece of infrastructure. What was the original purpose of the fiber, and who actually was using it?
Well, actually, you're absolutely right. There was an economic development group in our town that had worked with TCT West out of Basin, Wyoming, and they had worked to get a fiber ring hooked up. They had one circuit in, but they needed to close the loop, and it was right around 2000 or 2001, I believe, that they did complete that loop. And, of course, as you know, there's quite a bit of time and effort in right-of-ways and construction and all that to get it done. The idea was that they, being TCT West, would have the beginning of several rings and loops within the basin so that they could provide services and expand their markets into the Powell, Cody, and the rural area. And, of course, the city seemed to benefit of that, so we partnered where we could help with the political as well as the easements and that stuff at that point.
Mm-hmm. And this was all happening in the early 2000, 2001 time?
Yeah, it was done by 01, I think. It's somewhere early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. So now who again was actually using the fiber, that initial fiber ring?
Well, that was actually owned by TCT West. It's my understanding, and I don't know their full business plan or obviously their private company. I don't know all their customers, but I know that they had rented and leased some fiber early on to some of the other incumbent providers, and I'm not exactly sure what level, but they had other agreements in place, and of course for their own use as well, you know. Mm-hmm. So
none of that seemed to have trickled down to Powell then. It was just, I mean, the ring was there, but it didn't sound like the city or the constituents were benefiting a whole lot from it.
That's correct, and that's what was, you know, that was, as I tell people when I try to give them the history of this whole process, is that that was one of the elements of the perfect storm that I've seen, is that I realize there's certain checkoff lists you got to have in order for you to really go forward in any type of project, especially when involving fiber to the home. And that was one of the things we knew we needed and that was in place already.
Mm-hmm. So describe a little bit of some of those initial meetings around 2005 that started shaping up the vision that eventually became Powell Link.
Well, basically, it was in mid, it was that summer of 05 that TCT West, the company that, like I said, is out of Base, Wyoming, they had actually contracted with an engineering company and had actually designed a fiber-to-the-home system for Powell and had actually gone out and bid that project in the late fall. And of course, that was a private company. I'm not aware of all the details, but when they got the bids in, they decided that the board had decided that they were hesitant to spend that kind of capital investment without knowing the return. And this was, you know, as I said, fall of 05. Then in about October, they come to the city and talk to the mayor and myself and ask, well, if we was to do this in phases for Powell, in other words, instead of biting up the whole project at once, what areas do you think? Well, quite frankly, we had to be honest. We could argue the old part of town, the new part, the downtown. And so we really never could come up with anything that was an obvious direct answer to that.
Right. I mean, then, on one hand, it's a small-ish community. I mean, there's like 5,500 people. I mean, it seems like you could have made the argument that we all need it, you know.
See, that was it, because, you know, I mean, obviously, I'm looking at it from Powell's point of view, as you mentioned in your introduction. Wyoming is the least populated state of the 50, and our area is, you know, we're total in the whole county is around 25,000. So, and Powell represents, well, now new census, we're a little over 6,000, but at that point, probably 55 or so. But you know, it's kind of hard to argue that there's one part of the town. Our town is really flat, and we're a rectangle about a mile and a half by 2.5 miles, if you will. And so how do you predict a residential and or business area that you would build a circuit to, per se? You see, it just didn't lend itself, as you can imagine, to that. And that's basically what started me deciding, well, how could the city get this done? That's basically the trigger, was in the fall of 05.
Right, okay. So now, were you the primary mover and shaker in this, or were there a couple of other people that took full, you know, charge of the leadership of moving this idea forward in some way?
Well, I would have to say, I guess I'll take responsibility now, because I did take responsibility then. I know that there was some media coverage, and there was a person that did an interview out of Billings and come down, and they said, well, it seems like, you know, at that point we was all in the concept series or stage about how we were going to do that. They said, well, it looks like you're kind of sticking your face out there and taking the chance. I said, yeah, I guess that's one thing about Wyoming. You stand up for what you believe and what you're doing, and especially in a small town as a city administrator, this whole thing, I mean, was 100% my idea. Of course, the mayor and council have got to support it. And, of course, I discussed that with them, that they were interested. And I can remember it was like just about Thanksgiving, 05, I went to a council meeting, and I just put on the agenda just an open discussion about the whole concept. And, of course, they had to support the idea, but, you know, the time and effort is definitely all mine. I know my wife can verify that for several weekends and evenings for 2 years of stressing about this. People got so they wouldn't even want to see me because I either start off and about where it was at or positive or negative because, you know, you do hit some pitfalls and some obstacles along the way in a process like this.
Right. No, I fully understand. And in fact, I had a conversation with the gentleman who was the driving force in Pulaski, Tennessee, and theirs is a rural and sparsely populated county, and he talked about, you know, in the early days, you know, he was the face of broadband. He was the one that was talking this crazy idea that we need to have fiber and we need to have this, you know, advanced communication. And after a while, people do, I guess, start to say, uh-oh, here he comes again. And now I would argue, though, that this kind of passion and focus is what's necessary because there's a certain amount of inertia to get an idea as a concept, you know, broadband as a concept, to broadband as a reality. You know, I mean, would you agree that you know, that is...
Oh, 100%. And I've visited with several different communities and some rural groups. Recently this summer, I was in a conference in Washington, D.C. for power, public power, and I visited with a gentleman and a kind of a consortium of rural villages, as they call them, in, you know, and Massachusetts, and that was basically, I think he observed in the discussion and something about the energy and passion, and I said, well, I think that's a given. If you don't have both of those, as well as a commitment and basically, I understand that every process and every project has its challenges, as I said earlier, but you've got to, you can't let that slow you down. The fact is, if you don't use that to continue, you'll never get something like this done. Because, and as I tell people, when they call me and ask me, I'd like to do a bullet sheet of this is exactly what you got to do and this is how you got to do it, but there isn't a one size fits all. But the most important thing is that somebody takes the initiative and tries to see the project through and gets it done one way or another.
Right, and that definitely makes a lot of sense there. You mentioned earlier that the initial iteration of the fiber network, the initial ring, was something that had been championed by the economic development group. Now, as you got into 05 and 06, was the network still viewed, or the potential network still viewed, as an economic development investment?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. We're also, you know, of course, we have what we consider to be one of the better school districts. We also have a two-year junior college here in Northwest College that's growing rapidly. And, of course, we have our medical stuff. And so we thought that there was not just for business, that there was existing entities. You know, one of the things I explained to the council and to the mayor, and of course this is all in the newspaper over the years and for the community and businesses, is that typically cities, you know, compete for that next great business or that wants to move into your community. And of course everybody wants clean technology, you know, low impact but high paying jobs. I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, but my argument was, well, I'm prejudiced, but the state of Wyoming has some of the lowest taxes and some of the best environment for businesses. And there again, my point of view, but the Bighorn Basin, Powell, Cody, and our area has some of the quality of life and outdoor activities that I felt like, why can't we do something that not only will attract any business, but also would help any existing businesses or develop businesses from home? And that's, you know, there wasn't, and somebody asked me, well, what I typically get asked, well, what two or three businesses did you attract? I got to be honest, there wasn't something on the agenda that I was trying to accomplish there.
Mm-hmm.
It's more to do with, if you build it, they'll come. And,
right.
And of course, I'd like to give you some great numbers, but since 08, when we got this going, you know what happened to the economy. But I still feel like there's small things I see. So I really believe the infrastructure, as I said earlier, is the city's responsibility. I just think this is the infrastructure that's long overdue.
Right. And this brings up an interesting question in that cities do talk a lot about bringing in new business when they talk about broadband. And I'm in the middle of doing a survey now of economic development professionals. And one of the questions, or one of the things I'm looking for in the data is, where does drawing new business rank next to improving the businesses that you already have? Because I think that when I first started doing the survey 2 years ago, it was all about the attracting new business, whether they were building a wireless network or a wired network. They saw the biggest advantage in drawing new business. Last year, it seemed like there was a shift in thinking to say, you know, working with our what we already have is just as valuable or more valuable. And it sounds like you're thinking along that same line, if I'm correct.
Yeah, and actually I guess I maybe didn't realize that that was really my thinking since late 2005 is and starting 2006 was really, I guess the reason I probably took that point of view a little sooner than maybe now is fashionable, it sounds like, is because I had seen the money that cities and communities and economic development and states grants had put in maybe developing an infrastructure extension or buying land or trying to somehow romance that next business. And I'm not saying they all failed, but if you look at the kind of money that's spent local, statewide on that, and if you add that up, and that's only for one business, if it works, you see, mm-hmm. why not help those people that are out there been in your community supporting as well? One of my arguments, too, and of course, I got to preface this, is I do come from a public power background and a double E, so power is my background, really. I know that when businesses, that when we were attracting them, or when the economic development group here was doing it that way, one of the first things they'd ask is, who's your power supplier? What's the reliability? What's the quality? And somewhere in that list of a few things, the communications come up, okay? Mm-hmm. And so my argument was, let's just basically build infrastructures that matches the checkoff list for existing and new businesses.
Right, okay. I see where you're going with that. Huh. Now, so you got your focus, you got this thing moving forward, you see where it can have some benefits. How did the decision to call in U.S. Metronets come about? Because they're something, they're a little bit of a different kind of a planning firm, it seems, from my conversations with them. How would you describe them, and how would you describe, you know, your original engagement of them?
Well, one of the things that I had explained to the mayor and the council, and when I say that, I'm also talking community because that's all public meetings, was that I wanted to make sure we built something or owned something that was open access. And I guess I just wanted to make sure that the infrastructure was such that we weren't going to limit to one provider. Okay?
Right.
For one thing, I understood, and of course that's ancient history and technology almost now. If you look back, it seems like it but I knew that things changed fast enough that we didn't want to build something that was going to limit not only the provider, but maybe the types of services that we could offer. If the idea is to attract, you know, new and existing businesses, then I think you have to build something that would be open to more than one provider or to what maybe future services on the Internet that we didn't even conceive. And quite frankly, I've already seen a couple examples in the last 5 years that I wouldn't have thought of 5 years ago. So that was what the motivation was, and basically how I got to U.S. Metronets is I just Googled open access fiber to the home or something, and their name showed up. And that's exactly how it came about, and I made a couple calls, and they responded, and that's how I found them.
Good deal. So what was the value that they brought to the table, in your perspective?
Well, they had experience with other fiber stuff, most recently at that point, Utopia, and some of the other stuff in Utah, as everybody's aware of. I think that It would be fair to say that they knew what had worked for them in the past, what they did right,
mm-hmm.
and what other towns and cities had done and providers, and they also knew what didn't work as well. I felt like they had some expertise in some of the technology of the basic system design that, quite frankly, I know there isn't a right answer to that, but it wasn't the kind of expertise and time that I either had for it or felt comfortable doing, and they did that.
Right.
They also knew the engineering. They had actually worked with the engineering company that TCT had hired, which is Mid-States Engineering in Utah. They had actually worked on with them on other projects. So it was as it started coming together, it just felt more and more like a natural fit.
Okay. Now, did you have a checklist of what you were looking for before you engaged them, or was it more a case of after you were introduced to them, you started delving in and finding things that made sense for what you were trying to achieve?
Well, kind of a combination. I knew that we needed somebody with the expertise and experience, as I said, but I also knew that the city, because this was taxpayer, we didn't want to risk taxpayer money, but mm-hmm. we also knew that we needed to upfront to get some of this engineering. Obviously, everybody knows professional services is, you know, they can't do that for free, but we were trying to figure out a way that we could get that expertise and that partnership without risking public or taxpayer money. And the way our agreement was with U.S. Metronets, they were given an upfront amount of money that basically, if in the 2 years of the contract, there was a two-year contract, if it expired before they could get funding for us, then we would get that back. And if they did get funding, we would still get that back through the proceeds of the bonds or from the funding. So we felt like, yeah, we had to upfront some money, but we felt like it was about as of a fair and riskless venture that we could do compared to any other professional services that you typically would hire.
Okay? Right. So it sounds like you had a situation where everybody has skin in the game and you are only, I don't want to say on the hook, but you're only obligated if there is success and they are successful at finding money. And having talked to them, I gather that a lot of what they did to that end was they went about identifying where the businesses were, who were going to be the potential subscribers, and so forth. Is that correct in terms of how they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's very correct. They also started actually getting us to think about, which we have since even used internally. You know, we discussed existing and possible future businesses, but you know, we have our own infrastructure, we have our own police department, you know, we have mm-hmm. our own streets people, we have our own engineering, we have our own IT guy. We have in our buildings, as in most towns, but our departments are actually scattered out throughout town. I mean, literally from one corner of the town to the other. Admittedly, it's not a big area, but for us, all of our departments are scattered out. We have, I mean, you know, our infrastructure for billing and for anywhere from the new aquatic center, utility billing, and all that is all tied together. And we have backups. We've now taken the central office and put a rack in there, and we have all of our servers backed up on the fiber, so it's not even it's a redundant backup. We have stuff in the basement here in City Hall, but our thought is if you had a flood or something. So we have redundant on top of redundant because of the fiber. Internally, we had capabilities that we could have never done before.
Mm-hmm. So that made, in essence, a viable anchor tenant, if you will, was the city as a user of the network and helping to therefore justify the investment in it because it was coming back to the city in a direct fashion.
Yeah, exactly. The fact is, that's a good way of putting it. The first tenant was ourselves, and we knew we would use it. And fact is that 5 years ago, I wouldn't have predicted as much as we have already used it. And if we want to do monitor of our new rest area we just rebuilt last week, our IT guy sets it up in a matter of a few hours. We have recordings. We have links back. We can, you know, and we have this at every one of our departments. And I mean, we are probably the greatest user of our own system. So.
Well, and that's good. I mean, I've written about over the years the need for the local government to step up and be the anchor tenant, because in many communities, whether small or large, that ability to use it and streamline your operations across the board represents an ROI. You know, it's not the traditional way that some bankers look at it, maybe, but in reality, you know, you're spending money for improved city services and reducing overhead in how you guys do your respective jobs. What were some of the other?
Yes, and
so what were some of the other potential anchor tenants that you looked at besides the city?
Well, like I said, we're in fact now, because of during this whole process, the incumbents, of course, just for the record, were asked if they wanted to be involved as service providers. They, mm-hmm. the both of them, did decline, but they were asked. And some of these had these other tenants, if you will, businesses actually signed contracts. So we are just now getting to a point with the college. We're looking at some options there, also with the hospital. So there's some bigger clients, if you will, as far as for our size of town anyway,
mm-hmm.
That we wouldn't have been able to do before. And I think that it's like everything. Everybody knew about this in the community because obviously it's been in the newspaper, it's been on the news, national news, and magazines and stuff. But I think it's taken a while. It's actually taken a couple years for it to really sink in that the residents of Powell and the businesses, we own this infrastructure just like the streets and sidewalks we use. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And even though it was well marketed, that was part of what USM did, US Metronets, you know, and there is pride in that. I think that it's just taken a while for the general public to see the value of that. And that kind of has to happen before you can get these other entities, because those are the working people that work in these entities. And so we're seeing that now in the last 6 months to a year. Of course, the actual service providers, TCT West, and it's their business to market and to get those customers.
Mm-hmm. But the overall public awareness, or making the public excited about the network in an indirect way, had an impact on who was going to step up and become an institutional or an anchor tenant of sorts.
Yeah, that's correct. That's exactly
okay.
How it works.
So let me come back to this, because I don't want to lose the train on this particular item, which is the no city taxpayer dollars at risk, because I know that was one of the most contentious issues, as it is in a lot of other places, with the critics and the incumbents saying, you know, you can't do this project because you're putting city tax dollars at risk. But you guys countered that in your planning process. So what did you come up with that made it possible to do this without putting those tax dollars at risk?
Well, basically, you're absolutely right. That was one of the elements we were looking at, and as well as the open access network, as I said. But when U.S. Metronets said that they were trying to get some different views of funding, and that they had some connections in that part of the business world, and part of the two-year agreement with them is that they would figure out private investors that would see the benefit of it, and that they would actually invest their money. And
mm-hmm.
that, of course, was what we were looking for. We didn't, because that was always when you first start talking about something like a city or a municipal-owned fiber system, and you just get into the beginning stages, that's where the naysayers or the incumbents are going to, of course, naturally jump up and yell foul, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you and I knew that. And so you got to have something that you feel comfortable with that, you know, because these same people, you know, I see them at football games. I mean, they're at church, they're at the supermarket, they're my friends, you know, they're relatives. I mean, you got to be able to stand up and say that you're playing by the same rules, or you're being fair with incumbents, or with not risking taxpayer money. And that was an absolute requirement from the get-go. So
mm-hmm.
that was another interesting aspect and requirement with the U.S. Metronets agreement.
Okay. So I know it's a complex arrangement in terms of the mechanics and the legalities of it, but do you have sort of a one-minute primer for the non-tax-oriented person, how you're structured so that those dollars aren't at risk?
Well, if anybody that knows me would say you can never have Zane give you a one-minute synopsis of something like that. That's just impossible, but I'll try. basically, what it is that we'd ask, as I said, if the incumbents wanted to partner with us, and they declined. So we had an anchor service provider, which is TCT West in Basin. And what the deal was, without getting into all the details, because, as you know, it's pretty massive, there was a wholesale transport charges. And basically, that's a matrix of all available triple play services in combination that they, by contract, would pay per service or at the wholesale level to the city, which we call PowerLink. That's our trade name for the infrastructure, okay? Mm-hmm. And in exchange for them paying for that, they would have exclusivity for 6 years. The first 2 years was basically the interest was put into the bond or into the financing to make sure that we had interest to cover it and to get it built out and to get the customer base established the first 2 years. And then they'd have 4 years exclusivity on the network before it would become open access. Okay, it would eventually become open access. But they also had the requirement for that exclusivity that they had to take and pay. In other words, they had certain minimums that they had to generate for revenue based on that wholesale transport charges. And if they didn't reach that, they had to pay the difference as a company. Of course, if you're going to ask for private investors, they've got to have some security and knowing that they're going to get their principal and interest payments every quarter. Mm-hmm. So that's the general. That's more than a minute, but that's as quick as I can do it. So
that's okay. I think it's a good starting point. Obviously, if people want, they can get in touch with you to get some of the particulars. Or there's actually a story in the Daily Yonder, which is a website dedicated to news for rural communities, and where I wrote up a lot about the mechanics of that deal. And it was very interesting because now from your perspective, and you've talked to other communities, there are a lot of small towns and that have populations similar to yours. Maybe they have 10,000 people. Well, okay, whatever. Is this approach that you use with a combination of controlled open access, I believe that's the phrase U.S. Metronets use, where you say for a period of time you're going to be the only provider, and then after that point and you meet certain goals, then we're going to open this thing up to other competitors. Is that something that other communities could do? Again, every community is different, but from your perspective, is this thing, can you replicate this in other places, do you think?
Well, I got to think it's certainly possible because, just to be clear, the two incumbents, obviously of those two, it was not TCT West. They had wireless access for, in the rural area and, of course, in the city at that time, but it was just with their antenna, type stuff. They didn't have wired services in the city. They didn't have an infrastructure in the city. So I guess my answer is if we can get a service provider of their quality with their types of services and background in the industry and for our area anyway to be willing to sign a contract and to do this, I can't imagine other towns can't. Because we, as I said, I want to be clear, we offered it to the incumbents and they chose not to be involved. And so, to me, that made it more difficult. If either of the two incumbents would have been involved, your take rate and your market penetration would be a lot, by default, would be a lot easier and quicker. And, of course, if you're looking for private investors, they're looking at return on their investment and their risk level, of course. And so I guess I'd have to say definitely if Powell can do it in starting over with the provider, I can't imagine other towns can't do that.
Uh-huh. That, I think, is a pretty good assessment. And, again, that was, as I said at the top of the show, that's one of the things that attracted me to it, was that the town is so small in relative terms, and yet they were able, you were able to figure out this particular solution, there's got to be other similarly sized communities that could do something along those lines as well.
And that's exactly my exact, you know, like I said, we're 6,300 people or something now. And if you look at what the market availability or sales, if you will, for our customers and for services, and we can make it work in rural Wyoming, I mean, I got to think that other places that it should be possible, if not easier.
Right. Okay. I would be inclined to agree. That's for sure. So let's see. Well, let's actually talk about the marketing aspect of this. When you were looking at potential anchor tenants, did you ask them for any kind of commitment? And I bring this up because in one of my conversations with US Metronet, they talked about you know, the provider had to see something, some sort of commitment before they would go on the line and say, okay, we'll put skin in the game and we'll, you know, do this with some assurance that there's going to be a payback in the future. So I'm just wondering, in order to get that level of confidence on the provider's part, did you actually have to come in with, I don't know, sign letters of understanding, or what kind of commitments did you have from your other folks?
Well, basically, you're right. We had, you know, letters of understanding and information that was signed early on, just because, you know, you got to get through that preliminary business plan and structure. And as you mentioned, it's a fairly complex financial arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
And both from the operations or from the city side, of course, especially from the investors and from the service provider. We had a contract, obviously, was signed in March of 06 with U.S. Metronet, and at the same time, simultaneously, it was agreed down by the council in March of 06 for TCT as the anchor service provider. Of course, they knew with each other's contract read, so they knew our agreements at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the board for TCT was well aware of what the terms were and what our desire was and which direction we were going with that, and as I said, they had actually engineered and had authorized an engineering and actually a bid for the project. So I guess I would, you know, be clear the fact that that board had a little bit more knowledge about the POW market and the cost of infrastructure because they had themselves looked at it. And so they weren't totally taking our words or U.S. Metronet's at that point. So
Okay. I see what you're saying. So when you launched the network, did all of those agreements and understandings and so forth, did all those people pretty much step up to the plate once the network was live?
Oh, yeah. There was a two-year term, and I have to say it was the 11th and a half hour that they had a couple false starts on getting finances, and that happens. We thought we had it within the first year, and it ended up taking almost a full 2 years, literally, within a few days, but U.S. Metronet did pull it off. And as soon as it you know, the money and the bond proceeds was available, then, you know, all three members of the team, which is basically the city and U.S. Metronets and TCT West, I mean, it started immediately because we knew, you know, we already done preliminary engineering. We only had to update the plans for the new residential areas, and there's some business parks that had developed in the last 2 years to make sure that the infrastructure covered all that and that the plans and stuff, and that we get the infrastructure to pass at least 90% of all available businesses and residents. So everybody jumped right in. I mean, basically, construction started soon after that. We had a lot done by winter, but basically it was a year. It took into the spring of 09. Because of a couple, 3 months, they had to shut down for the winter. But, yeah, everybody jumped in. I think it was 2 years of waiting patiently. And, you know, I think that made it so that when the finances were available, it was.
And then your subscribers, then you didn't have much trouble getting the actual subscribers then once you opened the doors and were ready to go. Because I think some people will wonder about if I set up, you know, if I identify 10 or 20 anchor institutions, you know, a lot rests on them actually stepping up and putting down the money as subscribers once the network is built. And I think the, I don't know, not necessarily rule of thumb, but a lot of thinking is that if you get those commitments early on and get those either larger businesses or the library system or the school district or whatever, if you get them excited about being a subscriber on the network, they will usually follow through and become a subscriber in reality once the network is live.
Yeah, and that's true. And I think in the case of Pound, it might be because of the rural and the smaller community. But I think Powell Pride comes into there a little bit, I have to admit, because we didn't have a list of exactly, okay, the school district's going to do here. We knew they had already, the incumbents had made sure they greased their wheels for long-term agreements because they knew, obviously, it took 2 years to get the financing. So, you know, from a business point, they made sure that they kept them attached as long as they could. Some of them with agreements and made them some deals. And there was some, you could get triple play in Powell, Wyoming cheaper than I think I'd almost venture to say most anywhere in the United States for a while. and my argument to that, by the way, is that when somebody in the community, and you always have the naysayers, that the coffee shop people that, you know, they like to talk about the city and the community. We all like talk, we all like to complain about politics and who's running it, no matter what level we're at. But my argument would say, well, what was your bill for triple play 6 months ago? What is it now? If you never connect to PowerLink, you're always going to pay less. You've saved enough money and already. Look at what you have in Powell that you've saved in the services from anywhere else. And, you know, that usually calms them down right away because they can think of their own example. And I'm saying all this because we weren't really counting on, oh, yeah, the bigger ones at the initial, but we knew there was some long-term agreements that had to expire out there, which, as I said earlier, is starting to. But we wanted the businesses and the people to support it to get our market penetration by Powell Pride, and I got to think that's what actually is pulling us through, to be honest.
Is the community pride in the network and the community pulling together behind this project?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons we called it PowerLink. We wanted to build on the in the past, not just with this, but there is pride. I mean, there is in all small towns, and that's about America. But we wanted to build on that Powell pride, and that's what where the PowerLink trade name kind of come out of.
So let's talk about the marketing campaign. You know, the structure of it. So when you launched, I know there were banners and I think you had a big barbecue and so forth, but give us a sort of the high-level view of what your campaign looked like in the first 6 months, your marketing campaign.
Well, basically, as you said, we had the normal marketing stuff. We had, billboards, and we had a marketing company help us do some stuff, including the name and that stuff out of Utah. We have a big banner location downtown off the 4-lane that you can see that we had a banner built specifically. And on the light poles, the lower new modern-looking light poles, we had the banners, the individual ones and stuff. So, and as I said, remember, this has been going on for years. I've been talking about it, and there had been 2 years since the agreements had been signed. So the even Joe Citizen was well aware of what was going on, if they were paying attention at all. But basically what we had done is it was engineered, of course, in different remotes. And so we'd set up kind of a list of those remotes and started once the construction. And, of course, construction is not fun for anybody, whether you're a business or a homeowner or the city. So to try to help alleviate that a little bit, we started giving these areas an idea that when theirs might be turned up and started trying to get the excitement of this service possibility so that you could kind of overlook some of the nuisance and that happens with construction. And so that seemed to happen as much as possible. And of course, when you have somebody that's got internet access that, their base speed is 20 meg that you can speed test it, not just at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, that it might get close to half of that. And when their neighbors started seeing that, or when friends and relatives are around from bigger cities and seeing that our available speed and access to data was multiple times faster, that starts in a community. And that, and we actually had a kind of a waiting list per remote that, And part of what we were doing there is that TCT now, as I said, they're responsible for this as a service provider, and so they had technicians ready and installers ready, but we wanted to, they had several months of appointments booked right away, and we were trying to spread that out. Unfortunately, because of the weather and some the construction, it ended up being piled up closer. You know, several of them turned up, a half of them at one time, quite frankly. But we were able to reduce the amount of people they had to have by spreading out the connections. And it just kind of like it all kind of happened at one time. In a matter of a few months, the community, those initial people that were waiting, got hooked up, and that kind of jump-started it.
That's pretty good. I mean, I know that I've talked to some folks who mentioned the need to space out the numbers of people that you add on and that you connect, because if the number gets too large, the waiting list, instead of being an inducement or an advertisement of sorts, then becomes a negative. Or if you do too many too soon and you can't physically support them with, you know, their customer service calls or their connection questions and so forth, that starts to work against you. So it sounds like your crew got on top of that and did structure your growth, as it were.
And that's exactly right. And because we could separate the construction inconveniences and concerns with the people, they know where I live and they know where City Hall is. Okay. And we tell, I mean, you know, the office.
Hello? We seem to have some sort of a disconnect here. If you folks will bear with me for 1 minute, I will try to figure out what happened here. And we'll try to get reconnected with Zane. I'm sure there's just some sort of disconnect there in the line, telephone line. And by the way, if anyone has questions they want to ask, please feel free to jump in on our chat room and queue up a couple of questions to talk some more, because I do want to continue the discussion on some of the market activities and how those worked out for them.
Hello?
Is this Zane?
Hello?
Yeah. Did Lucia just went dead? Hello?
Yep, I'm here. I think we're hearing you. I think we're here. Oh. You're good to go.
Okay, yeah, it just went dead on my end. So.
Okay, so you were describing the marketing,
yeah.
And we had talked about having spaced out the construction aspect of it so you didn't get backlogged and people didn't get too disgruntled.
Yeah, and like I was saying, we kind of tried to separate so that people didn't associate with a service provider or the services they were going to get from them with the construction. We wanted to be clear that that was the city's you know, if their grass is tore up or their sidewalk had to be replaced because of a junction box, you know, that kind of stuff, which we did, and it took some time. But we wanted to make sure that we separated out the responsibilities in the eyes of the businesses and the residents, and so that they could take their turn, TCT, on worrying about hooking people up as well as the customer service side. So, and that was one of the things we're attracted to them, is their history and customer service and the fact that you don't call an 800 number. You call the local number here, and there's somebody available. If not, they'll get back to you. When they say they'll call you, they will, you know.
So. Right. So a heavy emphasis on customer service and the closeness of that customer service.
That's right. And as I said, I guess, you know, I know this whole issue about broadband, especially for incumbents caring about rural areas, that's what this whole topic is. That's what the concern's been for. How do you do that? And I think that on the flip side of that, though, to kind of reiterate, that's where the small community, or as I call it, the POW pride, or whatever your community, how you view things, if you work together and you support it, because you're smaller, you have a greater leverage in that for the number of people. And so what can be a disadvantage or perceived as that from other incumbents, you can actually use to your advantage.
Mm-hmm. And would I be correct in assuming that the campaign, you weren't competing on price in this marketing campaign?
No. Originally, there were some of the original rates they were charging that was easily obtained you know, to compete with them. And, of course, because they knew for 2 years and had more than enough time to react to what they knew was going to be built in Powell, if we got the funding, of course we did, then even at those reduced levels in contracts, which TCT never did require a contract for any of their services, price in competing at that financial level was not a discussion. That's not been an issue, especially if you look, if you can even compare like services, especially in the data, that's hard to compare when you have a fiber system. So,
Is there any one particular marketing activity that stands out in your mind as being particularly successful?
Well, I think that what I try to expand on, and hopefully was a little clearer, was I think it has to be a community issue. It isn't, you know, as an engineer, we all like the data, the specs, and the speed of this, and the number of channels, and the entertainment, and, you know, everybody likes all that stuff, you know. But it's got to be something that matters to the average person and families in the community and businesses. And I think that even though it was 2 years getting the financing, I've seen in the community, at least the people that I, you know, come in contact with personally and business-wise, that almost seemed to build that support in that 2 years. And so I think that even though it took 2 years, I think that almost helped jumpstart the initial marketing and market penetration.
Right. Did you find radio or ads or any one particular tactic to be, you know, maybe clearly above the others in terms of return or results that were generated?
Well, I just think it's an overall probably input by all media. I mean, our mayor owns a radio station here, and the local newspaper, of course, they followed it the whole time, Powell Tribune, and the mayor's radio station, K-Powell. I mean, they had, news discussions about it. Like I said, even the Billings paper, Billings Gazette, covered it pretty consistently. And there was a couple newspaper or magazine articles about it early on when we first started. And I think the fact that somewhat it kind of is an extension of that local pride in the fact that it wasn't just us worrying if we were going to get it. It was the kind of the regional as well as the nation kind of wondering if little Powell, Wyoming could pull this off.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I think there's that pride expands prior, you know, past the local football, you know, the rivalries that always exist between neighboring communities. You see what I mean? There's that pride then extended statewide and obviously nationwide.
And you've generated, close to 30% market penetration just for PowerLink?
Yeah, I looked at the numbers because I get a report every month from TCT, and they list the individual services. So I kind of have to – it's a lot of lines of information. So I, in my view, thought we had to be getting – and this was a couple months ago – we had to be in the 28 to almost 30% market penetration, and their board, or at least their main staff member, Chris Davison, he kind of said, yeah, I think we are getting there. So it confirmed what my analysis of the data was, is that I would say safely by now we got to be in the 30%. And if you look, as I said, since the funding in 2008, you look at the national economy in the last 3 years, I don't have to tell anybody that. So I guess I throw that in because I think that could have been used as why we didn't get as much as we might have wanted, you see. But in contrast, even with that going on locally and nationally, that to get to 30% at this point, I think you say something about the whole system.
Yeah, it probably speaks well of the nature of the service and how excited people are about this. Now,
pride thing, yeah.
Right, exactly. Now, how long into or post-launch did you get the second provider?
Well, basically, we're actually working on that right now. We don't have that actually in place. We've had some interest. We've had a couple companies ask us. And what we're doing is we're getting we got to have an agreement, as you know, we have with TCT as a service provider. We're also doing that with another provider, and we're trying to keep it generic so that if we have other ones, we want to treat everybody the same. As I said early on, the financing is based on the service provider paying on a WTC or wholesale transfer charges. Well, those will, of course, be the same for whatever provider, and nobody gets a better deal or a worse deal. And
right.
That's already in our agreement with TCT. And so what we're doing is we're developing as we speak. We got the attorneys working on base agreements, as I call them, or templates that we will use. I fully expect in the next few weeks we'll have this one, okay? But we're working on those agreements right now. But
right.
We're not just doing it for them. We'll have it available. And I don't know if the economy, you know, turns around for the better, hopefully. We anticipate there's been a couple other calls of interest by another one or two also. But we are to the point of the second one, getting the agreements done.
Okay. If you had to give two pieces of advice, one on overall planning and one on marketing to other communities, what would those two recommendations be?
Well, I think you hit on with your questions. Obviously, you're knowledgeable about this whole process and about the frustrations and energy it takes and time. I would first say and foremost, you've got to have a lead person and or group committee, if you will, that really is dedicated, that truly from their own personal side sees a need for the community. There has to be that energy and passion, for lack of better terms, because there is going to be a lot of frustration along the way, you know, either artificially done by other people or just the nature of the infrastructure, okay? Trust me, it is. And if I didn't have the mayor and the council support, all my passion and energy would have been wasted. So I would say you've got to start there, okay?
Right.
As far as marketing, I don't care what size of community. There has to be information enough in the community, whether it's editorials, whether it's public meetings, the public and the businesses that exist have to see the nature of it. Yeah, as I said, you're trying to attract these other businesses, but they're not part of your community that's going to be involved in this whole process of trying to finance it and putting it in and disrupting streets and sidewalks. You have got to get your local people and businesses on board and understand the value of a city providing this infrastructure. And that would be my two things right there.
Okay. And I mean, I like those. I mean, I think those make a lot of sense. And I have yet to run across a project where there wasn't one or two people that had the energy and the passion to be able to deal with the ebb and flow, of which there's a lot of ebb and probably a lot of flow that rolls through there. And so, you know, definitely right on to that point. And like I said, it will be interesting seeing how this year's survey of economic development folks pan out that whole issue of, you know, do you take care of your existing businesses or do you start looking at, trying to attract businesses in. Now, one thing, we got about 2 minutes, and maybe this has been talked about or maybe it hasn't, but in that area, that realm of trying to take care of your own businesses, people are seeing a need to help startups, basically people who are maybe unemployed or underemployed that want to start a home-based business, or the two people in the garage, which was so in vogue in, you know, a decade ago. People are saying that we're ripe for that. And so why not take this network and create some city economic development services and create a layer of home-based entrepreneurs? Have you seen much of that, or do you have any thoughts on that? And we got, like, about a minute and a half.
Well, basically, that is exactly, you know, and I don't want to put down the value of attracting businesses either. I hope it don't sound that way, but I knew that there was a couple other businesses and big companies out there, like Illusions with their Korean speaking English and stuff, and they were looking at, and they partnered with the college, but you had to, in order to be an instructor on that Illusion system and to teach the Koreans how to speak English, you had to go to their lab because of the speed, and then you had to do that on a certain time frame where retired people or teachers or people that met their requirements, they could do it. They would more likely do it if they could do it from their home, and that has been the case. And so I thought, well, if there's that one that I know about out there, there's got to be other ones that, and as you said, with the economic times, you know, maybe people feel like, well, if I'm going to take a chance, I'm going to take a chance in my own business if I don't, if I'm unemployed anyway. You know,
right, exactly.
I think there's an opportunity out there. I mean, what are you risking if you're already unemployed? Okay,
right,
and
exactly.
And I think I know there's a couple, graphic artists. There's one company here that's expanded, and they were one of the first ones to be on our system. You know, and because they could see the need of it. So I think it's quietly happening, and I think that's absolutely right. I don't think there's a certain marketing area, whether it's a new or existing. I think you've got to, what better infrastructure than a fiber to the home to appeal to the residents, whether you're a gamer or to an existing business or to a future startup home business or to other public entities. And as you said, the biggest customer is ourselves from a city government operation and public safety. You know, there's just so much that can be done if you own your own fiber system.
Great, and that's going to wrap up our show. Zane, thank you very, very much for being our guest today. Thank you to our sponsor, Hiawatha Broadband Communications, and I look forward to seeing everybody at our next show where we will have Blair Levin, Chief Architect of the National Broadband Strategy Plan. So, Zane,
well,
good day.
Well, thank you,
and
too.
Everyone
appreciate
else?
It.
All right, have a great day.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Bye.